Okay, I think this is good. Okay. I'll be talking about working across the University of Texas campus to develop new policy. And I'll be going through the different institutions that were involved and the different traditions that they came from, and our process of orienting the policy towards the needs of the borrower. A quick little background about the University of Texas at Austin. Since its opening in 1883 to a class of 221 students, the flagship campus of the University of Texas system has grown to a current combined enrollment of over 51,000 undergraduates and graduate students. As one might expect of such a large campus, over the years, a variety of cultural institutions have been founded, operating independently of each other. In more recent decades, state funding, and this will sound familiar to many of you in state agencies, state funding of the university system has fallen dramatically. Currently, less than 15% of the university's operating budget comes from state funds, and this continues to fall. So with that, we're all kind of going for the same part, small slice of the pie. And on-campus loans are really a quiet but ever-present reminder to upper-level administration of how cultural institutions add to daily life. In fall of 2014, directors of lending cultural institutions on campus, at the behest of the provost, were asked to re-examine their on-campus loan policy. This group did not include all of the cultural entities on campus. For example, say the Texas Memorial Museum, which is a natural history museum which does not lend, was not included. Only actively lending collections were included. Who loaned to non-museum spaces were included. Our goal was to build a manageable policy that both conveyed limits to borrowers and gave flexibility to our individual directors. Staff across these institutions developed a working group of the following people: Beth Dodd at the Alexander Architectural Archive, who was representing both her own archive as well as the interests of the UT Libraries, formerly known as the General Libraries, which has a decent number of special collections, though they don't operate independently. The Benson Latin American Collection, Julianne Gilland participated, Lynn Bell from the Briscoe Center for American History, Gabriella Trulli and Meredith Sutton of the Blanton Museum of Art, and me representing the Harry Ransom Center. As one might expect, our initial meetings touched upon the common challenges of maintaining on-campus loans. And actually, of these entities, only the Benson, Briscoe, Blanton, and Ransom Center truly actively have long-term loans. The Alexander Archive was, Beth Dodd was representing multiple interests there, but none of them loaned actively. But they wanted to make sure that they were not being committed to anything that that they didn't know about, understandably. So it was very important to explore the ways that our different institutions approached loans so we could craft a more universal policy that would be possible for all institutions to adhere to. Libraries, museums, and archives, while they look similar on the front, as we know, they have different traditions and different resources. And we found it necessary to acquaint ourselves with the knowledge base and skill sets that each individual institution had. I'll start off with the registrar. The Benson Collection and Alexander Archive, neither of these institutions have registrars, so the curators would be responsible for fulfilling these loans. Neither had the tools for site visits, and neither were particularly familiar with loan agreement wording, not because of, because they'd never had to handle that before. And they knew that they were vulnerable. The Briscoe Center and the Ransom Center both have a registrar that coordinates loans, but I don't do collection management or accessioning at all at my institution. We are more in the library and archival side of things, and we have a very ambitious exhibition program for an academic research library, but our traditions are definitely in library and archives. And Lynn Bell at the Briscoe Center does limited accessioning of objects. They operate as an archive, and she does not accession objects that are part of an archival collection. She only accessions individual objects that are not associated with archives. This might not sound as though it has anything to do with loans, but it does speak to the different cataloging practices which are being cataloged with different systems. And let me add, there is no common CMS. In fact, the Ransom Center does not have a CMS. We have a library catalog, but we have no CMS. Most of the archives have digitized finding aids at these different institutions, but not a comprehensively digitized collection. And of course, the Blanton was operating as a traditional museum with registrar job duties, as one would expect. Other issues involving differences with library archives and museums world is that display is not the primary function for an archive or a library. So there are many staffing resources and that weren't present at these different institutions. So let's say not having sufficient staff in-house to prep works for display. Some people, whoops. Sorry about that. So we didn't have, some institutions did not have sufficient staffing for display. You know what? Sorry, I lost my place. Other issues that came up involved vehicles, such as like the Ransom Center. We don't have a vehicle, and renting a truck from UT costs money that hasn't been budgeted for in our annual budget. And this was an issue for many of the smaller entities. On the other hand, sometimes institutions that actually do have vehicles, the loan request would require delivery at a bad time for the institution, and the lender would still be sort of stuck paying for transit. Other issues, such as not having sufficient staffing to do prep work for display, say doing glazing or for installation. The institutions that had no preparator also didn't have the breadth of loan experience to know what costs needed to be outlined to the borrower. And they often got caught absorbing costs because they didn't articulate those costs earlier in the process. And yet again, just because an institution has prep staff does not mean they are available. That prep staff may already be committed to the hilt, and outside help might be necessary. Additionally, another issue is that there is no paintings conservator on campus. Different institutions contract that out. So that's another level of expertise that was not present at most of these institutions. As we considered lender, we came up with a limited number of locations that we would definitely loan to. Again, this was designed to rein it in as tightly as possible with maximum flexibility for each individual director. Again, we all know it's about the working relationships that the different institutions have. On the campus itself, we all agreed to loan to the office of the provost and the office of the president of the UT at Austin site. But we also had to think about the UT system as a whole, since much of the administration of the entire system is also based in Austin. We chose to continue loans to the office of the regents and the residence of the chancellor. We also decided that, of course, each institution would independently develop and maintain a list of works they're going to loan. Again, considering that some institutions do not maintain a CMS, this is going to be more challenging for some institutions than others. But at our institution, we had never been proactive about this, and we had had some issues with lenders or potential borrowers coming in. We would bring them down to where we had our painting storage, and of course it would point to the jewel and the crown things that they wanted to have. And you know, it's when you're helping somebody who's high up in administration, just continually saying no is kind of a problem. So this, in this way, will put forward what we are prepared to lend. So that was a shift for us, a welcome shift. We defined the costs that we would expect the borrower to pay for: glazing, conservation, transport. We also included a per item administrative fee, which directors would be able to waive. I'm actually going to be very interested to see if that administrative fee actually ends up being charged by anyone, but we thought we'd put it in there anyway. And basically, especially for the institutions without preparators and with limited exhibition staff, they were pretty relieved to have these costs outlined, articulated, and articulated as not having to be borne by them. We also chose to articulate the responsibilities of the borrower as a separate section of the loan policy, or pulling out and restating things that were in our loan policy, but summarizing it for the borrower. And each institution would be able to make exceptions, basically additions, as they preferred. We loaned to a historic house on campus, and we didn't want to obligate anybody else to loan to that institution. We also brought other stakeholders into the discussion: the UT Office of Risk Management, Lisa Shanks there, the risk and insurance analyst for UT Systems, Eric Agnew, and the insurance broker for the underwriters of the campus insurance policy, that would be Lynn Marson. All of these people understand completely that these are loans that may need to happen. I'll be honest here and say I was really hoping that they were going to be the heavy on certain things, and but they're actually quite pragmatic. We kept suggesting different different tweaks, and they agreed that all cultural institutions should end the practice of indefinite loans and move to a 2-year loan period at the most with an annual check-in. Also, the work's length should be valued at no more than $25,000 per work and no more than $200,000 total for an individual office or space. Again, this was a recommendation. I don't know if we'll be able to adhere to the letter of it every time, but this gives us a good framework to say no when we need to. I also contacted our on-campus police regarding loss or theft. We have a daily email of all crimes reported on campus, and this sounds really dry, but the staff clearly enjoy writing up the events as entertainingly as possible. So it has actually quite a good readership, which is their intent. And so I contacted them because I was thinking, if we need to make a claim and we need to file a report, would this be showing up on this? We didn't actually want to publicly shame upper level administration. And they said that they could not omit, but they said that they could dumb it down, because they said they can say, a painting was reported missing from an office on the third floor of the main building. So they can sort of neutralize it a little bit, because from their perspective, they want to have somebody say, oh yeah, you know, something I saw something really weird that day. You know, yeah. And so their needs are basically tipping people off to let you know, so they'll tell you if they noticed that something else was going wrong. And then when we were going over the loan agreement and the policy, we thought about a couple of different issues. Actually, we're restricted from suing another entity on campus. So the legalese that we had imported from a standard loan agreement doesn't actually cover us in the same way. I need to be clear, I am not saying that you do not need a loan agreement. We had to regard these more as gentlemen's agreements instead of legally binding documents, which was kind of freeing because the intended audience is not museum staff who would understand the general content of a loan agreement. When I send a loan agreement to someone else who's a registrar at another institution, they generally know the format of it even before they read it. Since these staff are the custodians for your institution's works, it's vitally important that they understand what they're reading. Again, this is heavily influenced by the personalities of the people involved, but it's also important to consider the background. Remember that they are naive users. We were thinking about all of the different things that they don't know. They don't understand, again, the typical loan agreement. A long, densely written document doesn't actually convey information. It merely covers your bases for your own peace of mind without ensuring compliance. When was the last time you read the agreement when you updated your software? I think most of us just clicked on the button that says I agree, which is exactly what we want to avoid in this setting. They don't understand how much something like Optium costs or what security hardware looks like and what it might do to the walls of their building. They don't understand what's appropriate museum environmental conditions. They don't understand how proper care of museum works may be different than what they do to clean their own home, like it got food on it, so I cleaned it off with 409. They don't know what off-gassing is and why it's important to keep things away, you know, keep things protected when, say, the carpeting is being replaced. And they do not know what we need to, that we need to know ASAP if something goes wrong. I have to sort of interject here just to remind us that we as registrars are here and successful because we believe in rules and order. I jaywalk when the coast is clear, and today I'm wearing horizontal stripes, but generally speaking, I think that rules serve a good purpose and I adhere to them. If a rule doesn't work, it's not a sign to us that no one needs to follow the rules. It's the sign that we need to develop a new rule, and that's actually a different mindset than a lot of people. And that's also a role that works best within a professional ecosystem where everybody understands what our role is, and these people don't understand our role. So we can come across as finger wagging that can hamper communication, because basically no one wants to tell mom that they broke the china. The working group, so we worked through these issues and crafted something that we felt was as clear, as concise as possible, and we prefer reviewing it in person. We also really thought about some procedural issues, such as Gabriella Trulli, at one point we were talking about labeling works, said, you know, why do we put do not remove this item from the wall on the sticker on the back of the painting? Because once they see that, they'll have already done it. It's done. So, you know, just even rewording it to let them know what the next step is the most important part. So we were talking about developing labels that say, now that you have removed this from its designated spot, please call. Because again, it's about letting them know what you need to know, not about telling them what not to do. I've kind of reviewed all of these things not in a sort of a piecewise fashion throughout. I think that probably these are the sections that we came up with. I think perhaps the best part was the responsibilities of the borrower, which we articulated in three different sections. Basically, your responsibility before you get the loan, your responsibilities while it is on premises, and this is how it goes back to the lender. At this point, we have a draft circulating to the directors. And we hope to have it in place for the new year, but you know, the holidays are coming up. I did not share a copy of it since it is still in draft form, but I'd be happy to do so once it's finalized. My email is on the slide. And that's my talk. So there is if you have questions that you want to ask, there is a microphone at the front of the center aisle, and I'll be sitting down instead of standing at the podium.